Nothing.
As I said, we appreciate the invitation and the kind welcome to Grace Fellowship Primitive Baptist Church, and I want to thank you for that, and looking forward to our time together. As I enjoyed the singing and appreciated the prayer, and also looking forward to the fellowship at lunch after we try to speak to you. We are Primitive Baptists, and we have a doctrine that we talk about a lot, and that's the doctrine of election. I will quote you a text. And by the way, I strongly believe in the doctrine of election. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I don't apologize for it. But there's a text in Romans 8, 28 and 29. And it says, we know all things work together for the good of them that love God, to them that are the called according to his purpose. For whom he did foreknow, he did also predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he, that is Jesus the Son, might become the firstborn among many brethren. And if you compare that with places in other places in the scripture, particularly Revelation, I'm thinking of, he's called the first begotten from the dead. And 1 Corinthians 15 would refer to him as the first fruits of them that slept. So Jesus is the firstborn from the dead in the sense of being glorified and on and on. But I want you to notice that verse 29, because what we're going to talk about today, and I'll give you, this is sort of the theme or subject, is that God knows us by our very names. And I'm going to show you in the scriptures, and even the children can understand this. This is not a difficult, I'm not here to dazzle you with brilliance or doctrinal astuteness. I'm going to give you something that if you love God, when you go through these trials that we go through, we can all hold on to this. He knows us by our names. Now let's look at that text, Romans 8:29. For whom he did foreknow, he did also predestinate. You know, if you, I better watch the clock, so you see, getting synced there. I don't want to keep you here until 12:30. Whenever you look at the Bible, there's no way you can walk away from it and say that the doctrine of God's election and predestination and foreknowledge are not in it. It's just there, and it's everywhere. I mean, I could stack verse on verse on verse to show you. I could probably stack about four or five good solid texts that say he predestinates. I could stack a lot more that, a few more, a good solid verses. I'll call them proof texts, verses that say it, that teach us that God has elected a people according as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world. And then I could talk further about God's foreknowledge. I want you to think about this word foreknowledge, because it has a lot to do with what I'm about to get into, which is not as so much as related to election, but it stems from it. It's like the root and then the tree and the branches. We're gonna go to the tree trunk, but you need to understand where the roots are. The roots of God's foreknowledge and election, and they work together like hand and glove, is important to see. I was about to say, if you walk away from the scriptures, you can't deny this doctrine. And most people have one or two views that God elects us based on foreseen good works. We would accept Christ or believe or do something that whatever doctrinal bias you have. Or you believe in what we believe as Primitive Baptists, is that election is unconditional. God didn't see anything good in you. He only saw, it says in Psalm 14, that he looked down from heaven and saw that altogether we were becoming profitable, that there's none that seeks after God. And in Romans 9:11, it says that the children being not yet born, having neither done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. We believe that. So the concept that God foreknows is not just a mere cognizance. And that's the key point you must remember when you read these foreknowledge and election text. It's not that just God has cognizance or just knows. He just knows. Well, because he knows everybody's name. Nobody would deny that. I'm going to show you how he knows us particularly. He knows every nation. He knows every... Known unto God are all his works from the beginning of the creation. I think that's in Acts 15, maybe it's 15, 18. It's not important that I get the text right. You know it's there. We can go research it if you want to sit down and dig it out. But he knows all of his works, and he knows everything. This is, of course, the big $20 word, omniscience. God is all-knowing. He knows everything. The text says, for whom he did foreknow. I want you to know that that's not talking about just mere cognizance. That's talking about a specific kind of knowledge. That is an intimate knowledge. There's knowing and then there's really knowing. Yeah, most people know what a computer is, right? A PC, if you see one in the store. Well, I've put them together and built them for a while. Whenever I say I know computers, whenever I see something go wrong, like much like a car mechanic, I can guess pretty quickly what the problem is. You know, I have people call me all the time. My computer won't start. The first thing that goes off in my head, power supply. Are you plugged in? You getting any green lights? Is anything happening at all? And that's the first thing I'm going to go and check is the power supply. And you'd be surprised how many computers we just switch the power supply to one that works, and off we go. So just a little free tidbit from a computer tech. Anyway, so that's knowing, and then there's knowing. And when God says, for whom he did foreknow, he means he really foreknow us. He knew us. And I'm going to show you, before we leave here today, he knows your name. Little Jack, he knows your name. Lily, he knows your name. Did I understand you to say Joseph? He knows your name, Joseph. The least of us to the greatest. At least the youngest to the oldest. The scriptures are full, chock full of passages that show it. So whenever you read Romans 8:29, I want you to always remember, for whom he did foreknow means an intimate, deep knowledge. Those are the ones he did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son. While he has cognizance of all people and all things, he knows his people. Whenever you hear about the barbarian acts that have been going on in this country that have been brought to light here recently with videos, I won't go into graphics because I don't want to say anything that would make the children afraid, but you know whereof I speak. You remember what I'm saying to you about this. He knows every one of those names. And I could never bring myself to approve of such a hideous acts, not abortion and not what those other things that they've done. But you remember what I'm saying, because I find comfort in a God who knows even the unborn. I could take you to Psalm 139 and show you how it says, he compasses our path. He knows our thoughts afar off. There's not a word in my tongue, but lo, thou knowest it altogether. He knows what I'm going to say next week. Now, I don't believe that he makes you do evil things. He doesn't make me sin. But he does know what's going to happen. He knows what's going to happen. I want to prove the fact to you. I want you to turn to Isaiah, and we're going to look at three passages. And then we'll go and look at some specific examples of God calling people by name. Go to Isaiah chapter 43, verse 1 will work. 43, verse 1. In Isaiah 43, but now thus saith the Lord that created thee, O Jacob, and he that formed thee, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name. Thou art mine. He says he calls him by name, and didn't he call him Israel? in Genesis, in the book of, if you study the book of Genesis, he kind of renames Jacob and says, you're Israel. Israel is the 12 tribes of Jacob, all of his sons that he had. He says in this verse, I have called thee by thy name. Simple theme. And that's the one we're going to deal with. He knows us by our name, our very name. We can turn over to Isaiah chapter 45, verses 4 and 5. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect, he's still speaking of Jacob and Israel, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, Jacob, who is called Israel. I've surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. Thou hast not known me is repeated twice, and it brings up this point. Even when you didn't know God, we sing, Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God. He's to rescue me from danger, interpose his precious blood. Even when we were wandering, when we were, as the songwriter says, running the sinful race. Madly I ran the sinful race, secure, without a hiding place. He knew you, and he arrested you. He came to you and did a work of grace on your soul and transformed your life. Nothing a preacher could do for you, nothing a mission could do for you. All the money in the world couldn't buy your salvation. But when at the right time he came to you and did the work of grace, and now he's changed your heart. In fact, I believe, like I think we all do, is that the act of regeneration or the new birth is summed up best in John 3:8, as the wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou canst not tell whence it cometh or whither it goeth, so is everyone that is born of the Spirit of God. I can remember the season, but the moment I don't. I was about 9, and I remember the season well. It was summertime, and I remember for some reason I felt like there was a horrible feeling that came on me, and I cried myself to sleep all night long, and I thought I deserve hell. I really did. I didn't know anything about the truth. In fact, later I joined a church where I accepted Christ and I got baptized. I walked up and handed the preacher my hand. I did A, B, C, D, anything that they put in front of me. I tried to do it, make sure I had all my I's dotted and my T's crossed. I wanted to make sure. And the first time I heard somebody say, don't you know that these PBs think that you're saved before you were born? My response was, nobody believes that. Come on. But what did I find out? To my surprise, when I didn't know him, he knew me. All of us might have different circumstances, but can we not all say, when I didn't know him, he knew me? And I'm going to tell you, I'll repeat this during this discourse, you can't hide from the Lord. When he searches you out, when you pray for these little babies you have, you remember, they may run for a while, but they can't hide forever. He's going to arrest them, and he'll come for them in his due time. Isn't that wonderful? He knows us by our name. He surnamed Jacob. Let's go to Isaiah 49, or verse 1. I like these compact 43, 45, and 49. They're just right there together, and they're not hard to find when you're turning in your Bible. But these establish the fact I'm going to talk about. 49, verse 1 in Isaiah. Listen, O isles, unto me, and hearken, ye people from far. The Lord hath called me from the womb. Take that, Planned Parenthood. Take that. He called me from the womb. From the bowels of my mother, he hath made mention of my name. Can you imagine studying this? And I was studying Jonah, and then all these things about Planned Parenthood came out. Boy, as if the Lord just said, look at this, Herbie. Look at all this. Isn't this wonderful? And I'll tell you, sometimes the greatest thing is when you sit and study and God puts the gold nugget in your hand after you've been mining in the mine of his word, and then you just sit there and weep because you think, wow, how could he show such awesome things to such poor, worthless creatures as we are? And how much would I might learn if I just studied more? Because I don't study enough. Can't get enough of this. There's so many cares and things in the world. I had to go to Augusta last week on Tuesday, and my Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday was taken up. My sister was in the hospital. She had a second surgery for a lower back, and she'd had upper back in April, and hours of surgery, and now it seems like she's going to be better. But we had to be there with her, and there's things that we just are required of us. We have to do. We have to take care of each other and pray for each other. It's not just all about studying all the time, but it ought to be our desire and duty to try to study as much as we can. So it was so wonderful. I got to go down and be with the church in Augusta on Wednesday night and to be around people who believe what we believe in the midst of all that. Man, I tell you what, I was so tired. I was up at 3:30 on Wednesday morning, and I didn't get back to bed till 10:30 that night, Wednesday night. So I was one tired puppy, I want you to know. But I loved every minute of that church service, to see people who believe and hold the truth like we do. But anyway, now, it ought to be, if you're taking notes, you can jot this down. I won't go there. Exodus 33, verses 12 and 17. There's another place where it mentions God knows us and knew Israel as a special people. You know, in Amos 3:2, he said, and I won't turn there, I'll just quote it. Speaking to Israel, and he's warning them and chastising them for their sin, he says, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Well, he knows all families, like we say. That's an example of really knowing intimately and not just cognizance, because it's just mere cognizance. God knows all the families of the earth, and he can name them all if he knows all their names. Well, if he says, you only have I known, he's talking about the intimate relationship, the covenant relationship that he had with Israel in that passage in Amos. So that would go with the Exodus 33, verses 12 and 17 passage. Now, that he knows our names ought not be any surprise to us. I'm going to tell you why. He knows the name of every heavenly body. Are y'all like me? When I was a kid, I think it was in the middle part of the last century they discovered Pluto. I don't remember what year. It seemed like it was in the 50s. They discovered Pluto, a ninth planet, I believe it was. They said it was in our solar system. And so we would see the maps of the universe, and they would have the sun in the middle and then all the way out. And the last one on the biggest path around the sun is Pluto. Then a few years back, 20 years back, they decided, well, it's not a planet anymore. Or scientists aren't sure what it is. And then here in the last, seems like 6 months, they decided that it was. Do you get the idea that these scientists who know so much are a little fickle? How is it they know it and they don't know it and they're not sure? It is. We got better telescopes. I find that to be humorous. Anyway, whatever it is, God knows its name. And I've also read star maps, because I like to think I'm a student of astronomy, not as serious as I should be, though. And I got a big telescope, and it's collecting dust and all that. But someday I'll dust it off and go out and look at stars if I can get to a place in the country that's not covered with Atlanta's lights. Because, you know, when they're in the dark, you can see better. Maybe up here would be a good place to do it. I bet y'all could see some stars up here. Anyway, on these maps, they put all the stars out, and some of them have been given names through the centuries by men. But they put numbers. It looks like a sort of like a bingo card, you know, P2916, and then all kind of weird, you know, XYZ and this and that names that just scientists and various scientists. There's no convention where they're named in a uniform way, and so they just put their name on there, probably hoping that they could get the credit for coming up with a convention that everyone would accept. But that's the way men think. But my point is that those are names that men put on the stars. The Bible tells us in two places that God named them, and he knows every name. He knows every name. Psalm 147, verse 4, he telleth the number of the stars, he calleth them all by their names. Why do you think the oldest book in the Bible, Job, in about chapter 38, he asks Job the question when the Lord finally speaks up, canst thou bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or hast thou loosed the bands of Orion? God named those constellations. He calls them the Maseroth in another place. God understood that stars and formations had meaning, because he says in Genesis 4, between verses 14 and 18, on the fourth day of creation, he gave the lights and the stars and these bodies for times and signs and seasons. Oh, by the way, somebody said it at the Little River meeting last week, a week or so ago, and I remember seeing it in the Bible myself, and just as an afterthought, and he made the stars. It was, and he did that too. You see the beauty of the stars? We keep the seasons by the stars. We can look at them. And, you know, men, before God had revealed his word, that was how they connected. If you look at Psalm 19, the first part of that psalm, verses 1 through 6, it's the heavens declare the glory of God. It's God, 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 Elohim. It's always referring to him. But you get to verse 6 or 7, the law of the Lord changes to Jehovah, Lord. And from the end of the chapter, to the end of the chapter, it refers to Lord. Some people thought at one time that those were two psalms that were just crushed together or put together, but they're not. What he's telling you in that psalm in verses 1 through 6 is that God, through just the revelation of his creation, can show you so much about himself. As the psalmist said there, the heavens declare the glory of God. The zodiac people have hijacked that and made it something wicked. But our Bible says the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows forth his handiwork. And there's not day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night uttereth knowledge. And there is no place where their voice is, and that language is not heard. You don't have to speak English to understand that. You can look and see somebody. It was intelligent design. Somebody put something up there, and it's amazing, and it's constant. I've got a whole study on that. I don't want to get too carried away with that. I want to stay with our theme. But it says, he telleth the star number of the stars. He knows the number of them. You look at the stars, and the darker the sky, the more, as your eye adjusts, you can see more and more stars. And he told Abraham, can you tell the number of the stars? Can you count the sands, grains by the seaside? That's how big your nation will be. Obviously, God knew when he said that to Abraham that it was a infinite, almost new. And I'll say it like John said it in the spiritual. John saw the number that no man can number. That's it. No man can number it. But God can, because he knows them by their very names. A very similar passage in Isaiah 40, verse 26 says, lift up your eyes on high and behold all, and behold who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by number, that is, he tells the number of them. He calleth them all by names. I don't know all their names, but God does. By the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, not one faileth. We have a powerful God who knows everything about what he created. So when you read in Genesis 1, and God said, it's good, well, he can see it all and can tell it all, and he named it all, and he knows the number of everything, so he would be the only one who could say, well, that's good, that's good. He calls them all by names. So let's get off the stars and move back to God knows us by our very name, and give you some Old Testament examples of when God called someone by their name. And I'm not going to go into these passages and give you all of the good lessons that are here. And there's good lessons in each one of these passages. But we'll just read the part that we need and get our takeaway from it, which is he calls people by name. Genesis 22. His first one is Abraham. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. That just means he didn't lay sin before him and try to trip him up. It just means he tried him here, because he already knew what he was going to do. And I can prove that if I go back about, let's see, what is it? In Genesis 18:19, For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, that they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. So when it says tempt, don't get too taken or carried away with that language and let someone tell you that the Bible's contradicting. It's not. But anyway, and it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham, and he said unto him, Abraham. And he, or Abraham, said, Behold, here I am. God knew his name. He called him by name. Notice that. It's very simple. He called him Abraham. He knew him by name. Take that in for just a second. I don't know about you, but I love that. I think that's awesome. Now, again, a good story, but good lesson to learn. But let's move over to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, we come to Moses, and he's on the back 40 tending his father-in-law Jethro's sheep. Exodus 3. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush, of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned to see, God called him out of the midst of the bush, and he said, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. He called him by his name because he knows our names. He knew Abraham. He knows Moses. Well, okay, preacher, well, that's just them old fellers. That ain't got nothing to do with the youngins or young folks. And so let me assure you that God knows our ages from when we're in the womb to the moment that we die, and then when we meet him in glory. And if you want to see him talk to a young man, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 3. I can see right now, I didn't got the New Testament. I might need a couple of visits here. 1 Samuel chapter 3. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli. And the word of the Lord was precious in those days. There was no open vision. And it came to pass that at that time, when Eli was laid down into his place, that his eyes began to wax dim. It was evening, and they were going to sleep. That he could not see. And ere, or before, the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, Samuel was laid down to sleep. And the Lord called Samuel. This child may not have even been 10 years old. I don't know. But he wasn't hardly a teenager, at most. And he's calling this child who he has chosen to be his prophet. And he called Samuel, and he answered, Here I am. Here am I. But now Samuel didn't realize what was going on. He didn't understand the Lord's purpose for him. Remember, he called our name even when we knew him not, like the passages in Isaiah said. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. Remember that? Well, think of this. Samuel had to go ask Eli what was going on. He didn't realize it was the Lord calling. And he ran to Eli and said, Here I am. Here am I, for thou calledest me. And he, or Eli, said, I called thee, called not. Lie down again. And he went and lay down. And this happened three times, the Lord, Samuel. And he goes, and finally Eli realizes the Lord is speaking to this boy. And he tells him, whenever the Lord speaks, tell him. And so we come to verse 10. And the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel answered, Speak, for thy servant heareth. May we do the same whenever we feel the Lord's impressions on us, is to say, Lord, if this is of you, speak and teach my heart and my feet to do what you tell me to do. And show me in your word what you need me to do. But he speaks to the young too. One more example that lines completely up with Psalm 139 would be Jeremiah. And it doesn't say that he called him by name, but in the first chapter of Jeremiah, verse 4, 5, and 6 there, I guess it is. Let's go to it. The Lord says, I know you, but I knew ye. Verse 4. The word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Jeremiah 1, verse 4. Before I formed thee in the belly. You hear that, Planned Parenthood? Before I formed thee, I knew thee. I'm curious, that's in old past tense. Our God, you ever notice it in Romans 8:30, all those for whom he did predestinate, them he also called. The predestinated, the called, the justified, the glorified. Every one of them has an ED on the end telling us it's past tense. Because in God's mind, it's done. Now, maybe we haven't worked the experimental part out because we're still trotting around here and in the flesh. But in God's mind, our glorification is a past event. Now, there'll be a day of resurrection, but in the purpose and mind of God, it's all done. When he called this young man, Jeremiah, this child, I knew thee. Look at it, friends. It's not accidents. It's not bad grammar, and it's not scholars who butchered it up. That's God's word. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee, and before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee and ordained. Again, past tense. Not I'm going to ordain you, but I ordained thee to thee a prophet unto the nations. And then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I'm a child. And he says, Say not I'm a child. To the Lord, it doesn't matter. If a child, you know, Jesus said, Out of the mouths of babes, thou hast perfected praise. It can happen with a child. Children say amazing things. I one time I was this little girl, my mother babysitted, and she had the biggest shock of red hair. When I was young, I had red hair. This was a pretty little girl, and I said to her, and I was only teasing because I didn't think, and I said, You might be the ugliest little girl I've ever seen. And I thought, Oh, I've got her now. I'm going to make her mad. And she looks at me and says, well, at least I don't have orange hair. She didn't back up one step. Because of their unassuming and telling the truth just as they see it. Sometimes children say most profound things. Well, I'll tell you what, that little girl shut my mouth, but there are many times when they say very spiritual things, very touching things. I had a nephew who went to a church service with me in Illinois, and we were coming away from the church house, and that particular night I remember trying to speak on the text, but we see Jesus made a little lower than the angels over in Hebrews 2. And I remember him reaching up from the back of this. We had an Astro van at the time. It was about 1986 or 7. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he says, Uncle Herbie, after that, I don't think I'd ever join any church. Ever. And he meant Primitive Baptist. And it was obvious the Lord must have spoke to him, because I sure felt like my efforts were so little and small. But after that, I don't think I ever want to join any other church anywhere. He saw the truth. He saw Jesus. And I almost had to pull over because of the tears coming into my eyes when he said that. I thought, wow, that's incredible. You hope and pray for that for your children. You want that for your children. You pray for them to find a godly spouse. I'm no doubt starting to work on that already, I'm sure. I pray with you. You look like you're probably a teenager. How old are you? You pray for the man God has for you, the godly man. And if he won't follow the Lord, he ain't good enough for you. That's the one you want. That's the one you're looking for. The one who will respect you, protect your reputation, take you to church, and lead you in God's ways. That's the one you're looking for. I'm here to tell you. And if you don't, as an old preacher once said, you're just buying grief. You're just paying for grief that you don't need. It only took us about 11 minutes to say vows and get through that. Boy, it would take a whole lot longer to get out of it. and the money and the mess and the lawyers and all that. And the world goes through this every day. And that's why, one of the few reasons we have all the sorrow and the mess in this world. God speaks to children too. This word is for you and all these little ones, as well as us old ones. I say that because whenever I was a teenager, I remember riding down a road one day and looking out at a field where we used to play football, and all the boys that I played with were out there playing ball. You know who was in that car with me? It was a bunch of women all over 70, and we were going to a church meeting to sing those old hymns, and it sounded at times like they were just droning on and listening to some old man get up and talk about the Lord and all these doctrines that we love. And I had to say, as a kid, I thought, well, why am I sitting in here? What is it about these people? And I look back on that moment now and I think, I was in the right place. I know I was in the right place. I was in that car by God's mercy. Even whenever I was young and I didn't know him, he knew me. Jeremiah the prophet, he knew him. Now, for the last bit of time here, it starts raining, we ain't got nowhere to go anyway, right? And if I cut into your lunchtime, I'm just helping you save a few calories. Okay. In the New Testament, there are examples where God knows and talks to people and calls them by name. But I want to go first to the book of John and read a couple of passages and give you a couple of examples. And we'll just go through by chapter. In the first chapter of John, he calls his disciples. I think he finds them in about verse 35, John 1:35. And then we come on down, and I'm looking for Nathanael. Where is that at? 43. The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee and findeth Philip and saith unto him, follow me. Now Philip was of Bethsaida, a city of Andrew and Peter. Philip findeth Nathanael and saith unto him, we have found him whom Moses and the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said unto him, can there any good thing come out of Nazareth? The moment of honesty, probably. And Philip said unto him, come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and saith unto him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. He spoke what he thought was true about, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Nathanael saith unto him, whence knowest thou me? And again, Jesus didn't just know him as mere cognizance. He knew things about Nathanael that Nathanael didn't know, Jesus knew. And so Jesus says in verse 48, Nathanael saith unto him, whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, before that Philip called thee to come and meet Jesus, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Now, I know it's a custom in those countries to sit under fig trees when it's warm because of the shade or whatever they produce. But maybe he was praying. Maybe he was having devotion with the Lord. Or maybe he was just idly counting the minutes in the day, whatever. He was under a fig tree and Jesus knew where he was. When you were under the fig tree, well, or maybe it was, that's where Philip was when he was called, according to this. But before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. He knows the intimate details of our lives. When you walk in this world, always know Jesus is watching. Would you do anything to shame your parents? Would you do anything to shame your church? Would you do anything to shame your Savior? He sees everything that we do. We come to chapter 2, the wedding feast at Cana. I want you to notice the last three verses, 23, 4, and 5. And when he was at Jerusalem at the Passover in the feast day, many believed his name when they saw the miracles which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, because he knew all men. Now here he means he knows their works. He knows the motivations of their heart. And needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. He knew man's depravity. And if he would have made himself known, he could have been a great political, military king and gathered people around him and used those miracles. But that was not his purpose. His kingdom was to be a spiritual kingdom, not a military, political kingdom. He wasn't here there for that. He would have passed out of through their midst and got out of the way when they tried to make him a king. Like he told Pilate in John 18, "My kingdom's not of this world. If it were of this world, my servants would take up swords and fight. But it's not from here. My kingdom is of heaven. It's a heavenly kingdom. It's not one where we take over each other with swords." Anytime you see a religion that takes up swords against another religion, you know that's a false religion. Am I saying that we should never defend our homes or our homeland for the principles that we stand for? Absolutely not. But every just war will be fought from a defensive posture and not an imperial takeover somehow, to take over the resources or the people of another country. We ought not be interested in those things. We're just keeping house for the Lord. And there are evil men in this world. Sometimes we must needs defend our families, our wives, our children, our husbands, if you're a wife. And we must band together to stand for what is free and good and what is righteous. That's what this is teaching us here. Now, let's go to Saul and Peter. There's a chapter in the Bible in Acts chapter 9, and it speaks to my subject as good as any can. We probably, if we've heard Grace preach for any length of time, we know about Saul of Tarsus. He's breathing out threatenings against the church. He's the worst enemy the church has whenever the church was first set up. It says he was at the held the coats of the men of that stoned Stephen in the last part of chapter 7. And then in chapter 9, even though he does not know God, and he does not know Jesus, God knows him. And he's got something for him to do. He's decided it's time for him to be a disciple. Saul, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, that is Christians, they were to be, whether they be men or women, he might bring them bound, that is tied up, hogtied, if you will, and bring them bound to Jerusalem to be put to death. Remember, Paul said, "I was a murderer and injurious." These people were put to death, and Paul facilitated that. He was an enabler of it and participated in it. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven, and he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" By the way, just a side note, you think Jesus didn't identify with his church? Why do you think Jesus stands in the middle of candlesticks in Revelation 1? It's because he's always near his church. He's always in the middle of it. He's the center of it. But he's coming to Saul of Tarsus, and he calls him by his name. "Saul, Saul." And Paul said, he said, "Who art thou?" And the Lord said, "I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks." Like I said, you can't hide from the Lord, and you can't run either. Whenever he grabs you, why do we call it effectual calling? Because it takes effect. When God does it, it takes effect. And he, Paul, trembling and astonished, said, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" And he said, and the Lord said unto him, "Arise and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what to do." Like Ron Popeil would say, but wait, there's more. There is more. Look who else the Lord knew. Going on down, verse 10, "And there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias, and to him said the Lord in a vision, 'Ananias.' And Ananias, he said, 'Behold, I am here, Lord.'" And the Lord tells him what to do. Now notice that he knows where Ananias is. He knows where Saul is. He knows their names. He calls them by their names. The Lord said unto him, arise and go into the street which is called Straight. He's going to tell us here in this verse, he knows where Saul of Tarsus is. He knows the street. He knows the house. He knows the owner of the house. And he wants Ananias to go preach to Saul and baptize him that he might receive his sight as well. Look at this. Go into the street which is called Straight. Inquire into the house of Judas, for one called Saul of Tarsus, for behold, he prayeth. And he has seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in and putting his hands on him that he might receive his sight. He knows the street you live on. I don't know what street you live on. I know he knows what street I live on. He knows who the owner of the house is. Judas. There's a lot of Judases in that time. If you went to the phone book, there would have been a lot of Judases in that town, probably. It wasn't just Judas Iscariot. There was a lot of men named Judas. He knew this one. He lived on a street called Straight, the Straight Street. It's got a capital S. I take that as a proper noun. Grammar is important, y'all know. I married a woman who was going to be a PhD in English literary criticism, and she did a college-level speech and composition as an undergraduate at Bob Jones University, but not mind you. So she got quite a liberal arts education. So first 5 years we were married, I got a lot of grammar. I always tell people we kind of slept with a dictionary between us because we were always arguing over. And the only argument over a word that I won was the word scallop. It's not scallop. It's scallop. She's from Chicago, too, by the way. All the others I lost, so I'm batting one for about a couple of thousand. So we see that God calls Saul by name, Ananias by name. He sends him to a street called Straight, to a house called Judas, and there's a man named Saul there praying. God knows us by our names. Chapter 10. This is a similar situation. I think he does call Peter by name here. Let's check this out. When he says, okay, he does. Cornelius is praying at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, the ninth hour. That's 3 p.m. Jewish time. 3 p.m. our time, the ninth hour is Jewish time in the afternoon. An angel comes and he tells him to go send for someone named Simon, whose surname is Peter. He tells him where he is. He's lodging with a man named Simon. He knows this man's occupation. He's a tanner. And he says, find him and bring him and command and tell him to tell you what's commanded of him by God. And so meanwhile, and I always notice that whenever the Lord does this, he's always working on both ends of the equation. He's always working on the preacher and getting him to the place he needs to be, and he's always working on the person that needs to hear what the preacher's got to say, because God knows everything. He knows where they're going to be, and he's going to put them in the place they need to be. Send them there, give the minister the message, make the heart of the hearer right to receive the message. All the details God works out. So, meanwhile, and on the morrow, as the two men that Cornelius sent, verse 9, as they went on their journey and drew nigh to the city, Peter went up upon a housetop to pray about the sixth hour. That would be noon. And he became very hungry and would have eaten, but while they made ready, he fell into a trance and saw heaven open and certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners and let down to the earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth and wild beasts and creeping things and the fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, rise, Peter. Kill and eat. And Peter said, not so, Lord. He knew the Lord was speaking to him. The Lord called him by his name. Now, have we not been consistent here? God calls you by your name. And I'll get to each of us in just a little bit. This was done thrice. And not only that, he knew to send those servants to Simon's house. He knew the house was by the seaside. And that makes sense. I understand a tanner's work. Everybody in the town can smell it. So I read somewhere Ulysses S. Grant, the president, the Union general, grew up in Galesburg, Illinois, and I think his dad was a tanner. His father was a tanner. And I think Grant couldn't wait to leave home and get away from it because he couldn't stand the smell. Probably everyone knew where that house was. But the Lord sent those men to the tanner's house by the seaside to find a man named Peter. God knew his name. He knew who he was with. He knew what the man did as an occupation and knew where he lived. God knows everything about us. Time for us to close the shop. Let's look at John chapter 10. I'll give you a couple more passages and then we'll be done. Jesus speaking in this chapter. Verily I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber, but he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name. Each of us, when he brings us into his fold and or out of that sheepfold in this parable, and what you've got here is all the poor shepherds in the wintertime. Look at verse 22. It was at Jerusalem at the Feast of the Dedication, and it was winter. They would pool their resources, and they would put their little flocks in what was called a sheepfold. Think of a paddock for horses. A little sheepfold, a little corral. And it probably had a shelter over it, like a little carport covering it so they could get out of the cold and the wind. But whenever a shepherd who put his particular sheep in, as opposed to the other men who might have pooled their resources to get the rental of this place, if another man were to go in and call those sheep, they wouldn't follow him, according to what he says here. I couldn't prove it if my life depended on it, but I've always thought he must have been standing near one of these things to make this such a powerful illustration. But whenever the shepherd who owned a certain flock of sheep would go in and call them out, they would follow him. And notice they follow their shepherd. Our shepherd is not a leader from behind. He leads us. He doesn't say, okay, y'all just wait back here. Y'all go fight the war. The captain of our salvation is a commander who commands in the front. But he calls his sheep out by name. He knows your every last one of you people, you brethren, you sisters, you dear saints. He knows your name. He knows our name. Whenever you have trials and you have troubles in this world, and we all do, we have to walk through the valleys as well as on the mountaintops. Is it not a comfort to know that we have one who knows us by our very names? That excites me so much. And the last passage. The kingdom of God standeth sure, having this seal. The Lord knoweth them that are his. And let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. I thank you for your attention. Water at my towel with me.